Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark here on Monday, March 11th, 2024. As always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you doing today, Clay?
Parker, I am doing great. I am impressed by your commitment. You're just as committed as our team. Like, look at you. On vacation, I don't know if you want to disclose where you are, but the fact that you are sitting here on vacation, ready to go, you have the best vacation setup I've ever seen. I know we're not going to, I don't know if you're going to take people behind your curtain, but it's awesome. I'm happy. Canucks are on a 4-game win streak. Everything is great in the world. My kids are bowling and winning championships left, right, and center. Everything would be great if it wasn't for a certain goaltender injury, which I know we're gonna talk about. But otherwise, I am good. How about you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm on my yearly March vacation. I know last year, last March, I did an episode from right there. And I think the year before, probably the exact same spot. So now I forgot to bring a microphone. So I could take people behind the curtain, I think.
Yeah, do it.
I've got my phone balanced on this beautiful Ziploc container with a nice little Bluetooth speaker for it to lean on. And it's got a wireless charger on the back. It is, we're ready to go. We've got the best production value in the business. So hopefully I don't sound too terrible. And yeah, we got three Canucks games to talk about. We've obviously got the Badger Demko injury to talk about. We've got the trade deadline to look back on. And I think we only have two games to preview this week. This might be our lightest week in terms of actual games that we've seen. And I don't know. I know it's a very light month. I don't know if we have any of the weeks that are just as light as this. But a lot of time for us to think about how Casey DeSmith is going to play.
Yes, and yeah, so much to talk about. I think the main thing is let's be happy that A, Demko's injury isn't too serious. At least it sounds like B, DeSmith is a very capable backup. And C, we only have 8 games to play for the rest of this month. So 8 games spread out over 3 weeks. So I think. You know, if you want to look at a best case scenario, there are some positives that can come out of it for sure. But I guess you want to do that for, no, let's do our games first and then we'll make that kind of like our piece de resistance, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah. And the Canucks schedule, you know, looking at it, because usually what we do is I search Canucks and then I get like the Google schedule, right? Where you can sort of scroll through, see all the games, the time, and it's set up nicely. And what I remember looking at it and being like, man, there's a lot of hard games in March. But what that doesn't really show you when you're just seeing months and dates, right, and not really a calendar view, you don't really see the gaps that the Canucks have here, right? Like the Canucks played Saturday, they don't play till Wednesday, and then they don't play till Saturday again, I believe. Like they get so many nights off during this month. And for a team that's had a condensed schedule and has had some tough travel, to get essentially an entire month worth of a homestand, right, 9 straight games at home, all of them with some gaps in between, 4 of the 9 with teams coming in on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, the schedule is really set up here for the Canucks to get some rest and to play well and ideally win, you know, 2/3 of these games and really cement their spot at the top of the division.
That is such a good point. By the way, I love Spartan. Although, are you talking about the quality of his camera, Spartan, or are you talking about what he's wearing?
I'm in a golfing town. That's all I can say.
No, you look good. You look good. You're best looking podcast on YouTube for sure. No, there's 6 months in a season. So that's 180 days on average, 6 times 30. There are 82 games to play. So when you divide that, that's like one game every 2.18 or 2.17. Basically one game every 2 days. But then you add in All-Star break and you take out some more days. So really, on average, you should be playing every second night. That's the average. Sometimes it's a little more when you go back to back, and obviously sometimes it's a little less. So exactly, Parker, I love your point because I know I always joke around and say, man, how come you look at games played and it's always the Canucks at the top of the league? Well, I wish we could, you know, be at the other side and then be catching up. So then we're not always worried about games in hand and figure out standings, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, now it evens out because instead of one day between games, we have a couple of times where there's two days and even 3 days between games. That's why our March is so light. And it's almost perfect. It's almost perfect.
Yeah, and you look at the Canucks, the way they set up the schedule, right, where they have their game Saturday, which they win against Winnipeg. And then Canucks PR, I think, tweets out, all right, Canucks are off tomorrow and off Monday, right? That's going to be so nice for these guys, right, where they've just been through a grind over the last couple of months, ever since the All-Star break, really, right, last month and a bit. And, you know, 1/3 of the team was on the All-Star break, you know, playing. So they didn't get any rest either. And obviously, you know, we've seen what the extensive play has done to Demko potentially. So yeah, having this rest, you know, it makes it, it's a little boring for us, right? Where we are, we have center ice. So we're watching random hockey games all afternoon, right? I've got, like I said, we were watching the Kings game before I jumped on here. I think it was 2-0 LA, which is unfortunate. But yeah, it's not, you know, normally when I'm here, I've got lots of Canucks games every other night, but this year, no, we're relaxing and no Canucks really to watch except for that win on Saturday.
Well, it's a true vacation then. Thank you, Carol, for supporting what we do here at Canucks After Dark, being a member here for 19 months, which is probably when we launch membership. So thank you very much. Everyone give Carol some love in the chat. So you want to, should we review these games first before we talk about the schedule more and Demko and DeSmith?
For sure.
All that good stuff.
So yeah, we'll take it back to last Tuesday. And this is the, you know, we look at this one on the schedule and there's a little bit of concern after the egg that the Canucks played the previous Thursday. You know, we were both at that game and it was abysmal. It was one of the worst Canucks games I've ever been to. And it was a 5-1 loss against LA. The Canucks really bounced back. It wasn't a super high event game. But the Canucks showed, hey, you know, we're a strong team. And there's, you know, we can hang with teams like LA, right? Even though they've been struggling, this is a team the Canucks should be able to hang with. The Canucks really bounce back in this one. Now, of course, I'm not going to load these goals, unfortunately, being out here. But LA opens the scoring about 10 minutes into the first. I'm not sure if you've got these queued up on your end.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, go ahead.
So, apparently there's no ads in the States, unlike there is at home. So I can watch this. First one is, you know, the Canucks all sort of get sucked into the corner. Trevor Moore is out alone in front, and he beats Demko. So they make it 1-0 in the first. Although the shots in the first, yeah, 9-5 in favor of LA. So the Canucks didn't look too great. The second period's where this game really started, though, for the Canucks, right? They come out absolutely firing, and they've been a second period team all year long. They come out 16 shots in the second to the 9 of LA, and of course they get that one goal. It's Elias Pettersson getting his, what is that? It's his 30th of the year, which yeah. is fantastic. And this is a pretty nice one. He makes Drew Doughty look silly. Canucks have a nice setup in the offensive zone. Who played it up to Pettersson there?
It was Höglander,
who's been so good the last couple of weeks here. Plays it to Pettersson. He finds a lot of open space on that right faceoff circle. There's a little shimmy on Drew Doughty, cuts to the middle, and just sort of slides it through. I think the goaltender wants some goal interference there, but initiated the contact. Really nice, classic, skilled goal from Pettersson.
Yeah, and that's the kind of goal I think that people want to see more of, and the more dominance and the confidence. The way we know Parker, he's such a good stick handler, such a good release. Yeah, he's always going to have a wonky skating stride. He's always not going to be the toughest guy on his skates. But this was a beautiful play because they were dominating possession. And then I think Lindholm was the one who left for him, or someone left for him, and for him to come off the bench and just kind of weave, sift through everyone. Especially, I love it when anyone makes Drew Doughty look like a like how he looked. So beautiful goal and much needed because you don't want to go into the third period down. So that was good.
No, and the Canucks really kept it up, and they played a really good defensive game in the third. Shots were 9-6 in the third period. Nothing doing. Goaltenders both doing a great job. But we go to overtime, and there is a single shot in the overtime period. And this is on a delayed penalty, right? So LA took a penalty. Canucks get the fourth guy out, and they're just taking their time. They cycle it around a bit, and then a pass from the goal line up to JT Miller, where he scores a lot of his goals, sort of the Ovi spot, right?
Yeah.
Just leans into one right at the hash marks of the, you know, just by the faceoff dot. And this one, he just brute forces past the goaltender, right? Fires at five hole. You know, goaltender gets a good chunk of it, but it just slides through on the five hole, which felt fantastic.
Oh yeah, and it's so good when you have our four all-star skaters out there between Besser, Miller, Pettersson, and Hughes. Of course, Lindholm was traded to us All-Star weekend, and Demko was the reason why Miller was out there because Demko had gone to the bench. Right? Sorry, the reason why whoever was out there. But yes, it's always nice because your power play doesn't even start, so you don't give up the puck. You just keep hammering and hammering away, and then once the LA touches the puck, if they do, then you get a whistle and you got your 2 minute, your actual power play to start. So I loved Parker, how aggressive they were, maybe because it was overtime, but I just love the fact that they, they didn't even bother for the LA player to make his way to the penalty box. And what a big win, because the Anaheim win that happened Sunday night, that was, we certainly should always win that game. I was glad that Casey DeSmith had a bounce back game, but this was, you're right, the rematch from the game where you and I were kind of pouting about on last week's stream, because it was only a week and a half ago, and a beautiful, strong performance that set them up for a big matchup against Vegas. It was great.
Yeah, it was an all-around solid game. I remember I was wondering, I don't remember this game a ton, but it was because I was I had a drop in. I was at it like 10:15 that night, so I was watching overtime in the dressing room on my phone. And everyone in the dressing room for that drop in apparently was as well, so we had a good time in there. Everyone was pretty fired up, so a good win against LA. So it's back-to-back wins at that point last Tuesday. And of course, you know, there's no rest until, you know, the last couple of days here. So the Canucks are right back flying into Vegas on Thursday. Vegas has been struggling lately, and we are praying that Vegas falls out of the playoff picture somehow. It would make me so happy if they go and trade for Tomas Hertl and do all this stuff and find a way to miss the playoffs. That would be beautiful, with their, you know, $80 million on LTIR, it feels like, every year going into the playoffs. Canucks go out to Vegas. They get it started pretty early. They're on the power play. Power play has been bouncing back, I feel like, a little bit. Although it's looked still really bad at times. Like, there's been power plays where it's felt like they've done absolutely nothing. This is, you know, Canucks just do really good work down low on this power play. They get a two-man advantage, which obviously makes life a lot easier. And right as it's coming to an end, they want to battle down low, play it up to Hughes. And of course, if there's a battle down low and a 5-on-3, the point is wide open. Hughes walks in, takes the space. He takes one little extra stick handle. If he scored before that, maybe they would have still had a power play after. but he puts it, he was under the arm or over the glove, just to sneak that by Hidden Hill. And the Canucks get an early lead.
And you make a great point about the power play, because we saw how bad it looked right before this. They had a 4 minute. I love what you said about Vegas. Yeah, the easiest way to avoid Vegas in the playoffs is if they don't make the playoffs. And with their Hanifin and Hertl and Mantha. But Mantha takes a high sticking penalty on, I think it was Hoglander or someone.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, like 2 minutes, like, on his first shift.
Toe of the stick right on the cheekbone.
So his first shift with the Vegas Golden Knights, and he's sitting in the box. But you're right, they looked horrible. The power play looked really bad for the 4 minutes until it was they got an extra penalty on a little scrum there. And then, Quinn Hughes then puts it by. So good start. At least they converted on something.
Yeah, and then, you know, the Canucks aren't on the power play anymore. That part sucks. But how about Phil DiGiuseppe getting on the score sheet? This was a cheeky one. So the Canucks came into the zone. Hoglander again that gets tripped here.
Yep.
So Hoglander makes a really nice move to the middle, toe drags around the diving for a sliding backwards poke check. He hit L1 R1 at the same time. Hoglander pulls it to the middle. Stick is right on the skate blade. Hoglander goes down. Puck goes right to Phil DiGiuseppe as Aiden Hill seems to be a little bit confused. And he's just sort of like getting up or in the process of getting up, and Phil DiGiuseppe sort of like slides it to the net. I don't know if it was a pass or what he was doing. It was a really weird play that Aiden Hill clearly didn't expect. It slides 5-hole, and the Canucks have a 2-0 lead.
Weird is a perfect way to explain that, Parker, because you don't expect – well, you're looking at Hoglander as lying on the ice for making that really good move outside in and getting tripped for it. And then, I think I expected the play just to be blown dead, because I thought – that there's no way that DiGiuseppe is going to score, right? He's going to shoot it. Aiden Hill covers it up. But Aiden Hill was kind of sliding over awkwardly. I wonder if he was kind of wondering what was going to happen. DiGiuseppe didn't get anything on the shot, but it was that perfect speed where it went right through Aiden Hill's legs.
It comes to Phil DiGiuseppe, and he's kind of backwards. Like, he's like, you know, back to the goaltender as Hoglander's sliding in front. So I don't think Hill really sees what's going on. I don't think he probably doesn't know exactly where the puck is.
Sure.
And he's just doing this, like, you know, he's like in the process of sliding over and getting that his left foot down to stop himself from sliding. And that just opens the 5-hole up just a touch. And it happens to be exactly where Phil DiGiuseppe throws it, when it looks like he's trying to like find somebody backdoor. I don't know who that would have been. Maybe Suter. Backdoor. No, it was Pedersen. He was trying to slide that to Pedersen ceiling backdoor, but it catches right between the legs of Aiden Hill, and it gets through.
Yep. Well, awesome. Awesome. So, yeah, good start for the Canucks. They outshoot them quite handily, and things are looking good. 2-0 in Vegas, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and then Vegas gets one back at the start of the second period. By the way, shots in the first period, 16-7. Just dominant from the Canucks from the opening gate. And that just felt really nice, the way they'd struggled. They'd been slumping, you know, a week, couple weeks prior. For them to go out and just take it to Vegas and really put their foot on the pedal was great. Amadio makes it 2-1 about 4 minutes into the second period. Trying to find this clip here. This is just a shot from the point. Did this one get tipped?
Yeah, well, Cole had no stick, so I actually watched this so many times, Parker. I couldn't tell if the shot actually went off of Cole's skate or not, but it gets past Demko from distance.
Just slides, just sort of beats him. It's one of those unfortunate ones. Canucks, though, you know, all credit to them. They take it back to them in the second period again, right? Shots 15-10 in the second. They keep the pressure on, and we get a Connor Garland goal here about, you know, 4 minutes left in the second period. This is just it's a really sweet play. You can't watch the replay of it because the cameraman during this game was lost, like absolutely. That's what
he was on the strip during the afternoon, I think.
Yeah, he had a couple too many Fat Tuesdays. You know, he had the big slushy with the alcohol in it. He was having a good time. But on the replay, you see Elias Lindholm hold the line perfectly, sort of a bobbling puck. So a really nice play. He just takes a shot, and it's one of those ones sort of right at the shoulder, so it sort of handcuffs Aiden Hill. Rebound falls to Garland, and he's got perfect hands here. Pulls it to the backhand, slides it through. Hill gets a piece of it with the paddle, which would have been insane, but it's enough to get by.
And with a 3-1 victory, that makes a perfect road trip, Parker. That made both our predictions moot because we went 1-1-1, I think, and they had already 2-0 for the week, not the road trip. But they sweep the road trip and they come home and it's a rematch again. Speaking of teams that beat us handily, just like the Kings did a week ago, 3 weeks ago, Winnipeg beat us handily at home. It was bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one was good because I got to watch this one here. And I mentioned to you before the show, we have some family friends that are from Winnipeg. So they also happened to be in town with us. So they came by to watch the game alongside us. And there was 2 out of 4 people being pretty happy for most of this game. Because honestly, this is one of the most dominant games, especially when you take into context the team the Canucks were playing, right? Winnipeg has been so good at shutting things down all year. Like they play such a strong game. Connor Hellebuck's unbelievable. To put that context into, you know, a 5-0 dominant win from the Vancouver Canucks from start to finish. Like this is the best game the Canucks have played all year. And you heard it from Rick Bowness in the post game. It is the worst game he has seen his team play in his 2 years as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, Rick Bowness was funny. I know we're going out of order because post game, yes, he only went for about 45 seconds. And he said about 3 or 4 times that there was no good player in the Jets, that this is the worst game he's seen them play in 2 years. And then when a reporter said, oh, so no credit to the Canucks? And Bowness said, no, they're a good team. This is the worst team the time we played in 2 years. And then he walked away.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, right? Like he's looking at it like, yeah, like they played great, but we have the capability to play like that. And we did. And this is where we get started pretty early. 2 minutes in, Quinn Hughes. Just looking unbelievable. The footwork on the blue line to just handcuff everybody, take it all the way down the right. Nice little pick from – who set the pick there?
I thought it was Cole.
Ian Cole set a nice little pick. Hughes throws it on net. And JT Miller, just hard-nosed, fighting for every inch there. Right as this puck sort of gets, as the battle starts, he drops the shoulder in, cuts off the defenseman. Nils Höglander has the rebound come to him, and the only way he can get to it is to go between his legs.
That was pretty sick.
And it gets right through. It's going right at the post. And as JT Miller's getting knocked down, he's able to just get the stick on it and knock that one in.
Yeah, there's so much skill on all three guys. You're right. Hughes dancing, Hoglander retrieving the puck through his legs, and Miller getting cross-checked by DeMello, I think, while the puck gets past Morrissey. Two really good defenders. So great, great start. And you knew the Canucks were ready to play when that went in just 2 minutes in.
Yeah, that was a hard-nosed goal. And yep. seeing as JT Miller's halfway getting up, seeing Hoglander go and just like punch him in the ribs, that cracked me up. But I was like, oh, Hoglander thought that was going in, and he's mad that Miller stole it.
Right.
That needed to happen.
Got to be sure.
And then the Canucks just keep the pressure on. I mean, they score again about 10 minutes later. And this is a really nice play by Hoglander just leading a 3-on-2 rush and creating opportunity, just beats his man up the wall, hits the brakes right as he hits the faceoff dot, allowing, sort of depth to get created on the other forecheckers there, and just throws it at the net. And
yeah.
I still don't know. I assume someone got a little piece of it on the defensive side, but it just sort of sneaks through Hellebuck, very not typical of Connor Hellebuck, but it just sneaks by.
Yeah, this is a weak goal. I agree. Very atypical for Hellebuck. And yeah, he kind of loses it, I guess, under his right arm, and it just trickles through. So Hoglander does get his goal after JT Miller stole his earlier in the period.
And the best thing about this goal, and I remember when Harn Orion said it on the broadcast, and I was like, wait, Nils Hoglander has 20 goals this season. Yeah. Yeah. All of which are at 5-on-5, if I'm not mistaken, I think is seventh in the NHL in 5-on-5 goals. That's absurd. Like, what a season we're seeing from him. And from starting sort of iffy on whether he might be traded, and even around the trade deadline, there's word around Nils Hoglander potentially as being an option if they wanted to go for a big fish. You can't trade this guy. He is so dynamic. He's creating so much offense. You still have another year of him at, $1.1 million?
Yeah, 1-1. Yeah.
For a cup contending team, if this team is that, which we hope they are, those are the contracts that get you over the finish line, right? It's those guys on cheap deals. When every team has the same $82.5 million to spend, having a guy making $1 million that can do this for you and put up 20 goals in the regular season, and he just screams playoff performer to me, like the way he plays.
Yep. And he'll continue to, we'll scream it, playoff performer. Even strength, playoff performance. No, he's fine. But yeah, he doesn't get a lot of penalty kill time. And obviously, if PP2 gets like 10 seconds a game. So he's going to have to keep contributing at even strength.
And then the Jets get caught with four guys essentially below the faceoff circles in the Canucks zone. I just took a freeze frame. There are four Canucks moving up ice with four Winnipeg Jets below the faceoff circles in the Canucks zone, which creates a 2-on-1 for Teddy Bluger and Phil DiGiuseppe with about 3 minutes to go in the first. Bluger just finds DiGiuseppe. It's a perfect pass on the 2-on-1. I don't think it's played particularly poorly by the defenseman.
Yeah.
Bluger just does a little stutter and then goes 5-hole on the defenseman to get that through to Phil DiGiuseppe, who just gets a piece of it.
Now, Parker, I know we established very clearly here that you play hockey and I watch hockey, but I've always been told that the defenseman is supposed to take away the pass. However, in watching this, I see Bluger's not looking shot at all. So, so I don't know if that means even more that the defenseman should have checked the second guy, or was that a good play and Hellebuck should have been like, what's your read there?
This one's tough because Bluger slows up and DiGiuseppe keeps going, right? So they create a bit of separation on the Z axis, right?
Right.
And what happens there is, look, the defenseman could cheat over and really take Phil DiGiuseppe out of the play.
Yep.
But that sort of creates a pseudo breakaway on its own, right? Unless the next guy can come back and break him up.
Sure.
The saying goes, and I know it's correct, that you're supposed to play the pass.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to balance it a little bit. You can't, if you just take the pass, if he just goes and skates over to Phil DiGiuseppe, sure, you can take him out of the play. But now Bluger has a breakaway coming from the side, right? Maybe 80% as effective of a regular breakaway.
Yeah.
So when I play defense, and of course it's beer league, it's nothing like this level. I like to play it really aggressive on the guy coming in, because if I can break him up early when he's not expecting it, that's valuable. Or if I make him make that pass really early, it gives the goaltender a bit of time to come across. And I think he did that. That pass gets, if he maybe takes one more step up before that pass comes through and gets the stick there, maybe Phil DiGiuseppe gets it at the top of the faceoff circles and the goaltender has time to square up. But he didn't, right? He took an extra sort of second to reach the stick out, and that puck gets to Phil DiGiuseppe now when he's at the bottom hash mark, and then it's, you know, really tough for the goaltender to get set. So
okay, no, that's good.
There is a balance.
I appreciate you teaching. And Parker, I'm not like trying to make you laugh or whatever. So I play forward when I do play my roller hockey. So they never put me on D unless we're like woefully short. The one time I was one-on-one, so I was getting backed in, and the guy in front of me was so good. Like, he was their best player. And I knew he just takes one step and he's past me. Yeah. So when he was about 8 feet away from me, I just fell down. And that was not to like trip him, because he can easily skate around me. It was simply to startle him, because I actually had time to think about this. I wanted him to say, what on earth is this fool doing? So I did that. I fell. I saw him smile through his cage or whatever he was wearing, and he just went around me and scored. So
I will say that was a pretty predictable ending to that story.
Yeah, sorry. Try to build it up, but no, okay.
Yeah, I mean, usually what I do is I sort of dive it, you know, try to get my body down as quick as possible, as flat as possible, and break up any passing opportunity, right? That's the best way to break those up. And I think the best thing to do there as a defenseman is to not be predictable and to make a decision quick, right? Yeah. Force him to do something as early as possible. Don't let him come all the way in, where now he's creating opportunities. Maybe there's a third guy coming in high that he can go back to if you do break up that passing lane. I think you just got to be quick decision. And I think DeMello took a little extra half a second there before he committed.
Well, thank you for affirming my move. I was quick and I was unpredictable. So sure. I'm fine with it.
Absolutely. So the Canucks go into the intermission with a 3-0 lead. Shots 20-9. I think it's the most shots they've had in the first period all year long. Yep. I think they were at 19 coming in was their best. And again, against Winnipeg of all teams, like no one saw this coming. I remember us getting ready and, you know, we have people coming over. They showed up an hour before the game and we're all sort of talking like, this is going to be a tight goaltending battle. Like, this could go either way. It's going to be a true hard fought hockey game with two phenomenal goaltenders. So knowing that, it might be, maybe it's 5-4, because who knows? But no one expected the Canucks to just come out and absolutely dominate the way they did.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. People were saying it was the most complete period. The first period, 20 shots, as you said, so good. And it just felt good. Saturday night at home, started the homestand. It felt really good.
Yeah, and they carried into the second, right? They had a power play pretty early, a couple minutes in. It's a huge shot that
hits Garland.
It hits Garland and sort of falls at the feet of Elias Pettersson.
Yeah.
And the defensemen are in a box, right? Which sort of leaves a guy like Pettersson, if he's playing net front, sort of, you know, he's got 3 feet on either side of him, and he's able to just have the time to, you know, get it to the backhand and sort of smack it through. Makes it 4-0.
Yep, it was good. And we just talked about PD scoring goals in different ways, or at least starting to score more. So a really good heads up play. Not afraid. Yeah, he didn't get pummeled or anything. So I don't think he was afraid to be where he was. It was good. Good goal.
Yeah. And then I guess in the third period is the next goal, right? The Canucks really started to shut it down. And again, they kept playing really good hockey. Hoglander takes it down the left wing on sort of a regular play. And keep in mind, there's four Jets defenders back here, right? This one's pretty inexcusable. He throws it towards the middle. I think, who is that? It's not DeMello again. I thought DeMello was at the center of all these.
Oh, Nemesikov. It was actually one of Nemesikov.
Hits him right in the backhand. Like, it should be a really easy play to break up. But Pugh Suter, all credit to him, in a 4-0 game, it's really easy there to drive to the net when your guy's throwing in front. And if it doesn't get to you immediately, to just keep going past and curl. But he actually hits the brakes here while all the Jets defensemen sort of keep going past and curl. And he's able to just find that puck and slide it past Hellebuck on the forehand.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a really good hand eye by Suter. And you knew the Canucks are feeling good when Suter's batting pucks out of midair kind of thing. So yeah, it was good. It was good.
So 13 goals for Pugh Suter on the season. I feel like Hoglander should have gotten an assist on that goal. They didn't give it to him because it did hit Nemestikov's stick. But, you know, you start to look at some of these numbers. Like, Pettersson's got 31, Suter's got 13, Miller's got 32, Hoglander's got 20. Then you see Quinn Hughes on the assist on Pettersson's goal. Oh, yeah, that's assist number 63 on the season. Like, the numbers are just getting absurd. But this is, yeah, all around. Just, I think this is the best game the Canucks have played in a long time.
Sure. And I think, you know, a couple of things that we mentioned as we recap these three games, there were power play goals in at least two, if not all three of them. And the other thing is, Parker, the Canucks are hardly taking any penalties. Like, they're killing off one or two penalties a game, and that's awesome. Like, Canucks penalty kills right in the middle of the league, 16-17, so it's not as bad as last year, but it's not amazing. But if you're only killing off one or two, the odds are you're not going to let a goal in. So that's pretty good. They played very disciplined, and that says a lot as you're gearing up for a stretch run to the playoffs and playoffs themselves. I think it's great.
It's only been one penalty in their last four or five games, right, per game?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, this last game, Bester takes a tripping penalty with 10 minutes to go when it's a 4-0 game. Who cares, really, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
They've been disciplined. They've been, you know, shutting down these teams when they're, you know, having those opportunities, which are few and far between.
Yep.
This is all around a great game.
Awesome. Well, we're perfect. We're right on schedule. It's 10:30. Let's do 10 minutes on Demko to Smith future, maybe a few minutes on trade deadline, and then go to the people. How does that sound?
Sure. Yeah. Maybe I want to touch on. First of all, I want to just touch on Nikita Zadorov. I don't know if you watched After Hours on Saturday.
I did.
That was one of the best interviews I've watched in a long time.
He was great.
He's becoming a fan favorite for sure.
He was great. And, you know, on the ice, and by the way, just before I forget, Fangirl, thank you for being a member for 20 months, acknowledging that. And Carol, thank you for gifting the 5 memberships. They go to Ricky, Hope, Nux, 649. Wallach and Spartan. So thank you, Carol. And Fangirl. Yeah, Zadorov, you know, on the ice, Parker, I think he's been good. I wouldn't say he's been a lot better these past 2 weeks. I think he was a little uneven. So I wasn't sure, like, as much as I like him, I'm not sure if he's going to be worth the $4.5 to $5 million he wants, blah, blah, blah. But then I see an interview like that where he's so well-spoken. He's so honest, even talking about the Russian-Ukraine conflict. Yeah. And he's talking about the gritty, and he's talking about his family. He is so likable. And it kind of makes me, it's not going to blind me to the money, but it kind of makes me want the Canucks to sign him a bit more. I don't know.
He truly has the intangibles, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's the size and, I mean, honestly, the hands that we've seen over the, especially the past couple of weeks. Like, I feel like he's really started playing his game quite a bit more. He's gotten some confidence. Hearing that he's the locker room DJ on a guy that's been on the team for a couple of months. And he's like, yeah, you know, I got a couple of playlists based on the vibes, based on who's there. Like, he seems to really be buying into the team. And yeah, is that worth a premium? Probably. We'll see what management does about that.
Yeah. I love how he said that the Calgary team was older, so like the hard rock. And the Canucks team's a bit younger. So he goes with like he did the West Coast rap through California. He did the East Coast rap through New York. Like, it's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Love it. Hey, if you were a DJ, if you were a team DJ, what would be like the top two or three songs or at least genres for you?
I think with where guys are at now, I know you can probably have a couple times with some electronic, but I think it's very vibes based, right? Going with the West Coast rap when you're going through California, I think is really smart.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a lot of just sort of good, you know, rock music for the most part. Right.
Yeah.
Cause it's a bit, you're not going to offend many people with it.
Yeah.
So,
right.
But yeah.
Yeah. For me, I'm pretty sure they'd all hate me because I wouldn't bring my gospel music. Like, I'm not that stupid, but I think I would do like some 90s R&B, like MC Hammer, Boyz II Men. So it could be hit or miss. I must admit.
Yeah. I think you got to hit the right demographic for sure.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to Thatcher Demko.
Yeah.
Obviously, this was concerning. He leaves the game, was about halfway through the second?
Correct.
So, yeah, he just, I think, yeah, there was a commercial. I think I went to the washroom. I came back and they showed a clip of him walking away and Casey Smith was on the ice. And my instant thought is, oh, it's a Luongo situation.
Right.
Hopefully, right? Very wishful thinking. But yeah, it seems that Thatcher Demko sidelined 2 to 4 weeks with a knee injury. You know, TSN's on it. Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly today had the most insight, I think. He said, sounds like less than a month, definitely the knee. So it's not an injury that he's seen previously before, but knees are scary. I don't like hearing that it's a knee injury. I'd much rather be like a shoulder, especially on a goaltender. However, and then I know like the Moj was tweeting out like, you know, 2 to 4 weeks on a knee sounds like a sprained MCL. Which, you know, obviously isn't the end of the world, doesn't require a scope, it doesn't require any surgery. It's just, you know, just got to ice it, rest it. I think that's really the best case scenario here. And if there's going to be a time that it happens,
yep,
could you have picked a more perfect time for a goaltender to be injured? Right on the lightest part of the schedule. So yep, it hurts the team standings the least. Theoretically, he'll be back 2 to 4 weeks. He's out. So that'll be 2 to 4 weeks before the end of the regular season and the start of the playoffs, which means he gets some forced rest for up to a month and then can get back up to game speed for a couple of games. And the Canucks have a goaltender who has done this before, right? Last year, J-Pat tweeted out, he had an Casey Smith had an 8-game stretch where he had to start due to injury. He went 4-3-1 in that time and played pretty well. It's not like Spencer Martin last year where we actually have a backup who, you know, we're a lot more comfortable throwing in to a handful of games here.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year, basically, Canucks threw in the towel when Demko got hurt because then you had Delia and Martin. This year, you know, it's fascinating, Parker. I did a quick vid about it today, and I basically said, you and I both said at the start of the season, perfect split is 2/3, 1/3, 55 for Demko, 27 for DeSmith, give or take a couple games. But the way it was trending from a percentage-wise that Demko was going to start 60 or 61, which is a tiny bit higher. So realistically, if DeSmith plays 7 of these 8 games, say by the end of March, then we're back to basically the 2/3, 1/3 split, even though it was the way they got to it was kind of strange. So I agree with everything you said, and we talked about this at the start of the show. It's almost like if you have to have an injury to Demko, it's perfect alignment. Look at that right now. We're in the middle of a three-day a gap between games, then a 2-day gap, then 1-1-1, and then back to 2-day gaps again. So you split the difference between 2 and 4 weeks. You say it's 3 weeks. Let's say Demko comes back on April 1st and you got DeSmith. He could conceivably play 8, if not 6 or 7 of these. Who am I kidding? There's no back-to-backs. I think he's playing 7 or 8 games. You're only putting C-Loves in like if you have to, I think.
Yeah, and I think the method here is, yeah, no back-to-backs. You're playing a lot of teams that are on back-to-backs. And Casey DeSmith is, bar none, your number two, right? Like, there's no question about, we could throw Tolopolo in for a game, right? Like, sure, he's playing well in the A. He's got, like, a 9-10 save percentage, maybe higher. Good on him, but there's no reason to actually do that. Now, I saw a suggestion. I don't know if it was J-Pat or someone else. But, hey, look, the Canucks are on a 9-game homestand. Farm teams in Abbey. You can do a little rotation here, right? Have Silas back up for a couple of games. Have Tolopolo back up for a couple of games. Get them both some NHL practices. Get them some time in the locker room. Like, it's probably a good development opportunity. And it wouldn't use, theoretically, any call-ups, right? You only get a certain amount of call-ups after the deadline. They'd all be emergency as Demko's hurt. So there's no risk of, using them up there. I think that would be a really nice plan. And, you don't have to play them in any games. Because the Canucks have no back-to-backs, right? And a lot of rest, right? Oh, no, Casey DeSmith has to play, 8 games in 23 days or whatever it ends up being, like, or 21 days maybe. Like, he'll be fine. Demko's done it all year long. Is it a downgrade? Sure. But we've seen that Casey DeSmith can hold his own. He looked great in his limited minutes. I think we only faced, 5 shots or something, maybe 10 shots in the second half of the game on Saturday night. So if the Canucks keep playing the way they've been playing, it's a hit to their team. But with the buffer that they've built in the standings, that shouldn't really impact their hopes of winning the division.
Yep. I'm going to make a prediction. It's not like some bombshell, but I'm just looking at the schedule here, Parker. So 3 days to Colorado, 2 days to Washington, 2 days to Buffalo. So nice gaps. And then every second day, Buffalo, Montreal, Calgary, LA, and then 2 days and then 2 day gaps again. So right in the middle of this 8 games, there is 4 games where there's 1 day of rest. I'm going to make a prediction and say if DeSmith, for whatever reason, needs a break, which I don't think he will, that they start C-Loves on that Montreal game on Thursday the 21st, even though DeSmith never played a game for Montreal, right? Or did he? No, he just got traded there, but he never played there. Because you want DeSmith on Calgary, Hockey Night in Canada, and then LA on the 25th. So if anything, the one game where I think you break everything up is the right in the middle, the game number 5 of this 9-game homestand. And that's the Canadians, but it's not like an earth-shattering prediction. I just think that might be a spot, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. And to honestly, to be relying, now you're relying on a 32-year-old goaltender with a career 9/11 save percentage. And you can't sure, you can't cut games out of the save percentage. That's not how percentages work. But yeah, that Wild game was an anomaly, right? He lost 10 goals. And any other goalie, you know, any starter gets pulled in that game.
Yeah.
In 4 or 5, maybe 6. But Demko was getting the night off, right? So, you know, DeSmith had to hang in there on a bad night. Right. But I think he had, what, like a 9-10 going into that, maybe like a 9-08. Last year, he was at a 9-05. And that includes, you know, an 8-game stretch where he had to play every game. 9-14 the year before, 9-12 the year before that, 9-16 the year before that, 9-21 the year before that. He is your perfect guy to play 20 to 30 games a season, and he's getting that run now. It's not like we're relying on a Spencer Martin who had played, you know, 8 NHL games or whatever it was going into last season. There's really nothing to worry about here.
Yep. No, I agree. Okay. So one more question about this, and then we'll move on to, I want to ask you a couple other Canucks related questions. With Demko, is this a case, are you of the mind that the Canucks have overplayed him and now look what happened? Or is it, hey, this could happen if you're the backup, this could happen in game number 10 and not game number 68 or whatever we're at, or 65. So where do you come out on that? Did they overplay him?
I'm not a doctor, unfortunately. Yeah. I the way they've been playing him, I think he was tied for third in starts in the league. So obviously he's being played a lot. He's not being played as much as goalies had been in the past, right? I want to see how many games did Kiprusoff start that one year? Like 76. There was 2 years in a row where he appeared in 76 games, right? Now, they were two of his worst years of his career. But the 2 years before that, he had played 74 in each game. Kiprusoff went seven straight seasons appearing in 70 or more games.
What?
Yeah, 74, 74, 76, 76, 73, 71, 70. So goaltenders used to play a lot more, but we've learned that that's maybe not the best idea because their performance falls, especially on second nights of a back-to-back. The difference between a starting goalie on the second night of a back-to-back and a backup goalie is usually pretty negligible statistically, so there's no reason really to play your starters in those games now, and that's why you don't see it very often, unless it's like a must-win. Have they overplayed him? I think so. However, we know, based on especially Boudreaux's comments during Donnie and Dolly today and just, you know, what's been heard is Ian Clark runs the show on goaltenders, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Probably has some input, but he probably says, hey, Ian, who do I have tonight, right? Like, hey, is Thatcher ready to go? Ian says, yep, and they put Thatcher in. The way he's been playing, you know, I think it's just a lot of just been riding the hot hand, right? Hey, he's on a roll. Why get him off of this roll? But the Canucks have overperformed to such a level that they really have been able to afford to put Casey DeSmith in more games, especially because he hasn't been bad, right? It's not like he's been an 872 goaltender where you're like, oh man, you know, hey, we put him in, we're probably losing, right?
Yes.
But, you know, it's like, hey, you know, we put him in, there's still a, you know, a pretty decent chance we come out with a win in this game. You know, you look at his stats, you know, he's 8-4-5. This year, right?
Yep.
So in his, you know, of the games that he is on record for, that's what, 21 points of a possible 38, I want to say, 12 for 70, 34, 21 of a possible 34. That's really good, right? That's a good pace for Casey. you're really not, you're getting a downgrade for sure. Yep. It's your backup goaltender. But it's not the big fall off that it would be for some.
Good. And last thing I'll say, and then we can move on, is DeSmith, we knew before Christmas when he was playing very well, he was only waiting like 5 or 6 days between games, right? Which makes sense. You know, one game out of every three. And then after Christmas, it was like 9 or 10 days between games, which you want to play more as a goaltender. So now he's going to get his wish and we're going to see him play. Yeah, like we said, the 8 games over the next 21 days. So every 2.5 days. So this will be good. I think I'm not worried. I'm truly not worried. I don't think you are either.
I'm a little worried only on the timeline perspective. I'm not worried about Casey DeSmith.
Yeah.
But we've had too many cases over the last few years of timelines being inaccurate from the Canucks.
Yep. Some people mentioned that in the chat. They have.
Yeah, yeah. Them saying, you know, 2 to 4 weeks and the guy's out for 6. Yeah. Or them saying day to day and then it turns into week to week. That's my only fear is that Demko's 2 to 4 weeks turns into 4 to 6, and then we're like, okay, he better be ready for game one.
Right. That's fair.
And now, of course, they don't have the luxury of putting him on LTIR and using that cap space because the trade deadline's gone. So, you know, it's a tough situation. And I'm just, I'm hoping that that 2 to 4 weeks is accurate. But if it is something like an MCL sprain that we've seen, you know, hundreds of times, and it's been a pretty consistent timeline, you know, even if it's on the bad end of 4 weeks, you know, you still have 2 weeks to get him dialed in for the postseason.
Good. Good. Love it. All right. Let's do 5 minutes on trade deadline, and then we can do go to the people for the last 10. And we don't talk about other teams because this is Canucks After Dark. This isn't Vegas Golden Knights or Carolina Hurricanes After Dark. Were you fine acknowledging that we traded for Zadorov in December? We traded for Lindholm at the end of January. Were you fine or disappointed with the Canucks not doing anything on Friday?
I was a little disappointed, if only because this management group has shown the want to just do stuff, right? they're so active and they're so willing to just tweak all these little things. However, when you have a team that you made addition early in the season on Sam Lafferty, very minor, very depth, sure. Going out and getting Zadorov, you know, a couple months back. And then, you know, obviously going back and getting Lindholm, you know, about a month ago.
Yep.
Those moves, if they had done nothing all season and then made all three of those trades on Friday, you know, then it's the talk of like, oh man, the Canucks are going all in, right? Yeah. They've made all these moves. But since they sort of spread them out through the season, you know, we sort of lose the logical portion of that where we're like, oh, well, they've already had these guys for a while, right? Meanwhile, you have teams like Vegas going out and upgrading, right? You have even teams like New Jersey going out and getting guys, and the Jets going out and getting Toffoli, and like all these teams, you know, making additions. And it's like, sure, the Canucks made additions throughout the season to put them a step above some of these other teams, but these other teams are now caught up on the additions front, right? They go out and get Mantha, get Toffoli, make these moves to bring them up on the addition scale to going in on the same level, whereas the Canucks had the time to make that extra push if they wanted to, right? I mean, we heard the rumors about Lindholm for DeBrusk for Gensel or whatever that would end up being, and it would have been crazy. But look, logically, the Canucks made some additions, and they're a team that is most likely going to win the division. They're a team that is a true Stanley Cup contender, the way they've been playing. And they focused on longevity, at least to a point, right? They said, hey, we were able to get the Pettersson extension done. Yep. That reduces some of our risk long-term, and it reduces some of our urgency long-term, right? Let's field the best team we can now without sacrificing too much for the rest of the window, which I think is fair, right? They're not doing what Vegas did, where they don't have a 2025 or 2026 first round pick now.
Right.
Vegas won last year, and good on them, but they have said, hey, we're all in again. Mm-hmm. And then after this, they're done, right? They'll have a first round prospect after this draft, but then no more coming. So they're going to run out of steam at some point, right? They just have to.
Yeah.
Because they spent all their resources. So I don't hate the idea. You know, it's less exciting, especially from a content perspective, which is sort of a different lens that we maybe see, which we don't even think about probably, but we like the excitement.
Yeah.
So I don't hate it. They've got a heck of a team. And it's hard to complain right now.
Yeah, and it's so funny because I agree with you. The slight disappointment from content, just from excitement, and so you feel like you're part of it. But you're right. It's not a perfect example or corollary because of different terms, but it's almost like our Lafferty, Zadorov, Lindholm is like Vegas's Mantha, Hanifin, and Hurdle. And I know they're not equivalent, but I'm just saying, I'm agreeing with you that if we had made our moves, the exact same moves, those are three big moves. Lafferty, not so much, but Zadorov and Lindholm, if we made that on the same day, coming from the same team, that would be a rim rocker for sure. Okay, one other thing. Phil Kessel, what's your level of disappointment in that not working out? Hot dog jokes aside, which I've never made one, and I will continue to refuse, even though I keep mentioning it. Yes. What was your
emotionally? My disappointment's high.
Yeah.
logically, my disappointment is not very high because frankly, it was a no lose situation if they had signed him. Right, he would have been essentially league minimum. He would have just been a free addition. If this management group, who watched him practice a handful of times with the Abbotsford squad, which we didn't get to, right? We saw a couple of clips of him being tired, but that was his first practice. Who cares? Mm-hmm. They had the time to go look at him and see whether or not he would be a fit, and they deemed he wouldn't be.
Yep.
Which to me means, all right, he wouldn't have been a fit. Let's move on. However, it would have been fun. And that's a different side entirely.
I must admit, when I went to bed Thursday night, Parker, I said on my show Thursday night, I said, I'd be happy if I woke up or on Friday morning, the Canucks got Toffoli and signed Kessel. Like that, yeah. That would have been enough for me. Nice top six depth and then a bottom six depth. And then I woke up and I think one of the very first moves was Toffoli to Winnipeg. I like, dang it. And then as we heard nothing about Kessel, I think the writing was on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. Toffoli is an interesting one. Like that's of all the trades that were made. This is the one I wish the Canucks made to an extent. A second and a third, actually, and the third's this year, the second's next year. So it's even less valuable technically.
Yep. Yep.
I would have liked that move. Now, of course, they can circle back in free agency, and I don't know if they will. I don't know if they would.
Right, right.
But, man, like, his success with Elias Lindholm, right, the cap, they would have to do some work to fit in. But that's where the Canucks have a bit of a hole, right? Pugh Suter is a top-six winger. Sure, he's been playing really well lately, and good on him. But that additional piece would have just – because we talked about how the Canucks need winger depth, and that was what we talked about Kessel being, right? It's like, hey – now you don't have to play, you know, Neil Zaman potentially or Phil DiGiuseppe in some of these games, right? You have a Phil Kessel that you can throw in at a moment's notice. You start to rotate these guys based on the need, based on the team you're playing. You know, Toffoli then shifts everything in the lineup down, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, Dakota Joshua is going to be a big piece of that when he gets back. But yeah, I would have really liked that Toffoli trade to have gone this way.
Me too. And then Parker, just dream with me. You have. I know Miller and Besser, Besser and Toffoli are both right wingers, but work with me here. You could put the Swedes together. You could put Miller, Besser, Toffoli, and then you reunite Joshua, Garland, and Bluger. And then your fourth line is now Suter, Mikheyev, and anyone at PDG, Amon Lafferty. I know you got one of those guys not here if Toffoli's here, but still, like it just sounds so much better in the top six. Or you go Lotto line and you go second line of Lindholm, Hoglander, and Toffoli. Now you're not battling for two right wingers. Like there's just so many options with a guy like that.
Yeah, it would have been, I think if the Canucks had made that move, Everyone around the league would have been like, they have really shored up their forward group. Like that is now that is a top tier front to back great forward group.
Yep.
Now, you know, you look at the now, is it still a fantastic forward group? Absolutely, right? And Lindholm is a big part of that. But they haven't added to that forward group, right? There's always been that little hole missing, right? They swapped out Kuzmenko for Lindholm, which is an upgrade, but it doesn't fill that hole, right? They still have five top six wingers, essentially, or top six players, I should say, top six forwards. They still have that one hole in which you throw, you know, and we wish Connor Garland would be the solution there, and he's been better, but he's been so well suited on that third line. But yeah, now you're going to have a Pugh Suter in your top six, for example, which, you know, isn't ideal.
You know who's got a good forward group? The team we're playing against Wednesday night. Lekkonen, McKinnon, Rantanen, Druin, Mittelstadt, Nichushkin, Wood, Colton, Trennan, Duhame, Cogliano, Kvaranta, or whatever, how do you say it? And then that's with Landeskog and Parise on the IR.
Yeah, and then you get to Makar on the back end and Tame. Yeah, Colorado's scary.
Yeah, yep. I agree. All right. Quick predictions. We only have two games to go through, and then we'll do 5 to 10 minutes of people. So we got two games. We got Colorado on Wednesday, and we got Washington on Saturday.
Well, let's ride it. Let's go 2-0. I mean,
I'm with him.
There's only a few options here. 2-0, 1-1, or 0-2. 0-2 doesn't seem very likely. I mean, the Capitals today, I saw a little bit of their game against the Jets. They didn't look
good.
Right. No, the Jets just sort of smothered them, as they have been. It was a good bounce back for them. They beat the Blackhawks on Saturday, they beat the Penguins right before that, but then they had lost to the Coyotes.
Yeah.
The Capitals, though, that the one thing as we get to this time of the year is you really get the push from some of these teams, right?
Sure.
The Capitals right now are 5 points back on a playoff spot with two games in hand on the Lightning.
Oh.
So every point to them, 19 games to go in their season, we're starting to get to critical territory. You know, yep. We saw Minnesota pull their goalie in overtime, which yeah. is psychotic yesterday.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's frankly dumb, in my opinion. unless you're like last three games of the season, you desperately need 2 points in every game. You're starting to get to that desperation point for these teams, though, and they're going to come in and they're going to come in firing. So the Capitals are a team I'd worry about. Obviously, the Avalanche is the game before that, and they just have so much firepower that I'm always going to be concerned by them, even though, look, the Canucks are higher than in the standings. But Colorado's been heating up a little bit lately.
I'll offer you 1-0-1 if you want it. You want 1-0-1?
I'll take 2-0. Look, I've been burned a lot by going moderate yeah. on this team this season.
We rarely overshoot with this team. We've always been undershooting for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's take the high road. Let's go 2-0.
By the way, I love what you said about the Minnesota Nashville thing, because yeah, in trying to explain it on my stream, I basically said you are so unconfident in your shootout ability that you'd rather risk giving up a goal into an empty net, which is doable, and losing your point.
Like, yeah. And I'm sort of looking at it from like a flow chart perspective, right? And it's like in the NFL, you see a lot of teams starting to go for two.
Yeah.
When they're down 14 and they get a touchdown, yeah. they go for two, because technically it gives you a 75% chance to win if you do get that next touchdown instead of a 25%, right? Like the math works out. In this situation, though, you have 2 points or 1 point when you're in overtime. You win, you get 2 points. You lose, you get one. So right yes. now you've earned theoretically 1.5, right? If you call it 50-50. Yeah. To win an overtime or a shootout. But if you pull the goalie, now you've gone from 2-1 to 2-0.
Yep.
Which means your expected value theoretically is 1, but it's really easy to score on a 4-on-3. It's also really easy to score on an empty net
yeah.
when you're 4-on-3. So to me, I think that's also kind of 50-50. Because yep. I think you really, you know, right now, yeah, your expected value is 1.5 points, right? You either win in overtime, lose in overtime, win in the shootout, losing the shootout. The average of those takes you to 1.5. It seems I get it if you're on game 81, 82 sure. of the season, and it's like, hey, we need 4 points to yeah. we need 4 of 4 to have a chance. 1 point does us no good. Do we really want to take this to a shootout? You know, let's let it ride. Which I think the Canucks are one of three teams to have done historically now.
Sure.
Back in 1999 or 2000. Which they lost, and didn't get a point for that game.
Yeah. So Matt Boldy scores, makes the coach look like a genius. It goes the other way. We're all laughing at him 24 hours later. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, look, they're pretty out of it, right? They're six yeah. points back. Vegas has a game in hand on them. Obviously, I'm cheering for them every step of the way. The Blues are playing the Bruins today. I'm cheering hard for the Blues. The Wild are playing. I'm cheering hard for the Wild. The Kraken were playing the other night. Team I don't really want to cheer for. The Flames were playing the other night. I don't want to cheer for the Flames. But I would much rather see the Flames in the playoffs than Vegas. So I'm going to be rooting for all the teams sort of in the mix on this wild card race with the combined 15% chance to overtake Vegas. I am riding that as hard as I can.
Parker and I were joking around before the show started that we either want Vegas to miss or we want them to launch the third. We don't want them to be in one of the two wildcard spots.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously Mark Stone's hurt, but once you're in the playoffs, it's a different beast, right?
Yeah.
And part of it is, oh, like the doctor suddenly is clear to play. I think it's probably Mark Stone saying, I don't care how hurt I am, I'm going to play, right? No. I think that's why you see a lot of these guys get ready for game one, game two of the playoffs. Because, you know, obviously they want to play.
No.
But, yeah, you add him and you add Hurdle and this team, you know, they're a wild card team and they've won 3 of their last 10 and they started off the season pretty bad and, like, or that started the season pretty hot. But, like, they've really been bad the last 50 games for the most part. But they scare me. They scare me as a team that could really get hot and you know, especially as an 8 seed, right? You think back to 2012. And you think back to LA that year, they give me a very similar vibe.
Perfect. Let's do 5 or 6 minutes of questions before we wrap up. By the way, as we start, Hope Rains is wondering, how can they check on the preseason surveys? Or is that something that we have to do kind of do in one of our shows?
Yeah, something I can do. I think you could probably go to the link if you can find it and see your results, or maybe you got an email from it. I don't know.
That's true.
But I can't look at it here. This is the worst time to do it, but I can do it at some point.
That's a postseason thing, and hopefully we're not getting into it too quickly. But thank you, Hope Reigns. All right. Do you think Demko no longer wins Vezina now since he's injured or still has a shot?
If he's only gone 2 weeks and he comes back and his lights out, there's a chance. But I don't think he's not the favorite anyway.
No, it's right. It's Connor.
Hellebuck's the favorite. That 5-0 game doesn't hurt him too much. Demko's going to be a finalist, and I'm going to be stoked.
I love this point from Ricky. It's still wild to me that a year ago we were on these chats talking about the T word, which I still can't say, who to draft and what Canucks. Yeah, I know. I said it a couple of times. You got me, Parker. And what the Canucks had to do in the summer. Yeah, Ricky, no kidding. Every time Parker and I, just before we press the go live button, we give each other a virtual hug because this has been 3 years of us waiting for this moment. Oh, see how excited Parker is? His phone just flew off of his Tupperware. Like,
I was just trying to adjust the volume, and I missed.
That was awesome. But Ricky, we agree. We agree. Parker, we're almost there. 5 more minutes.
Yeah. No, it's such a good point. I mean, I think about it all the time, right? Especially when there's any sort of, this team runs into any resistance or I can't think of the word right now, but they run into any trouble, essentially, any hardship. And I'm thinking like, okay, well, they're still first in the division. They still have a decent chance at the President's Trophy. And Money Puck has them an 11% chance to win the cup.
Yep.
You know, we came into this year thinking, oh man, I hope they make the playoffs. It's like 50-50. Look, where we're at right now, the Canucks are truly playing with house money. Yeah. But you also don't get many of these opportunities, right? And so while part of me can look back and be like, oh man, I'm just happy to be here. That's fantastic. Another part of me is like, hey, my whole life, this team hasn't gotten over the finish line. Clay's whole life, this team hasn't gotten over the finish line. Yeah. Every Double chance Parker's we life. Get, we need to make the most of it, right? Because who knows when this chance is going to come through again, right? As easily as this team shot up to the top of the standings, they could fall to the bottom. While we're playing with house money, it's not like we should just go and waste these opportunities.
Yeah, Fangirl asked between Joshua and Myers, who returns first? I think it's Joshua. We're starting to hear about him being around the team more. Da da da. Myers, we've actually heard very little about his injury, but maybe I don't know. Maybe it's not serious. That's why. It must be serious if he's not playing.
Yeah, I think it was a. I think we're just sort of in the mushy middle of Myers' injury.
Okay.
Because it was 4 to 6 weeks, and that was like 3 weeks ago. I want to say.
Yeah.
Right. It's sort of like it's too soon for an update. But it's also, you know, too soon for it's a weird middle ground, I think. But Joshua, I think, is getting pretty close. I think you'll see him come back in the next couple of games here.
Irwin says, wouldn't you rather catch Vegas early in the playoffs where there's a recovering spree? There's a recovering spleen rather than a later round when some players had a chance to recover.
I'd rather not see him at all, Irwin.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, theoretically, if they're going through all that trouble and they sneak into third in the Pacific, right? Theoretically, Edmonton's the favorite in that series, right? And Edmonton just takes care of them for us.
Yeah.
And that means Edmonton's going to be a hard team too. But yeah, look, Adin Hill's been so good this year that, you know, they can catch hot goaltending. They've got the firepower. They've got some defensemen that are decent as well. If Vegas is firing on all cylinders, and I think part of it's Stanley Cup hangover that we're seeing right now, but I bet a lot of that hangover goes away game one of the playoffs. Everyone's pretty fired up to be there. They scare me as a team. And look, Edmonton scares me too. I'm not looking at Edmonton and being like, oh man, I'd much rather play them over Vegas. I think I'd rather play Vegas, especially in the first round. But I'm also thinking like, I'd much rather play Seattle in the first round or at all. I'd much rather play Calgary in the playoffs than Vegas, right? So I'm just saying, look, the Canucks theoretically have to win 4 series, right? And beat out 15 other teams when they're in the playoffs. I'd much rather those, you know, if your first round opponent is Calgary over Vegas, that makes your odds of going to the next round maybe 70% instead of 58%. Right. Yep. Which then increases your cup odds by like 3 or 4%, right? Every single point counts.
Yep.
And that's sort of my perspective.
perfect. And we made the point too, Parker. We can't guarantee. We don't know that we're going to finish first in the conference. Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg could be right up there. So we can't just say keep our eye on who finishes in wild card two, because we could easily be the second team in our conference and end up playing wild card one. So it could be any one of LA, Vegas, Nashville, Calgary, Seattle. It's still wide open, although leaning towards one of Nashville, LA, or Vegas. But we'll see. We will see. Awesome. So when are you back? Like sometime this week, like next week, you'll be in your normal confines again.
Next week, I'll be back. I'll be back at my desk with the good microphone, with the regular light, with, you know, without a kitchen in the background. This is a dishwasher, if you're wondering.
No, it looks good. It looks good.
You know, it's we make do with what we have.
We do.
So yeah, I'll be back next week. But folks, if you enjoy the show, make sure you hit like, make sure you subscribe while you're here. 150 of a year, get that like count up. Make sure you subscribe, hit notifications while you're here. If you missed any part of the show, you can rewind back to the beginning here on YouTube. You can find it on your favorite podcast platform in a matter of 15, 20 minutes or so. Clay, any parting words?
Not really. I think we did a pretty good job of covering what's going on with this team. Grateful that we were able to still connect, and looking forward to some stars coming through this week. I'm not going to any of the two games, but I'll be watching Colorado and Washington. But all is good. And let's put all of our good thoughts and positive vibes behind Casey DeSmith and the rest of the team.
Absolutely. I picked a really bad time for my flight home. 6:40 on Wednesday, 3-hour flight.
Nice one.
Good no one. Wi-Fi on Flair Airlines, I'll tell you that.
No anything on Flair.
No food. No seat.
No seat.
No carry on. Hey, you want a carry-on bag? You pay $65 each way. I mean, I'll probably miss most of the Colorado game, but I'll PVR it, or I'll watch the third period when I land. Like I said, folks, if you enjoy the show, make sure you like, subscribe, do all that good stuff. We'll be back next Monday, hopefully talking about two more wins as the Canucks continue their top of the league push. Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you next time.